Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hey, how are you, Mr. Wilson? You doing okay?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. And so we are live and on the air. I know some shows have a green room. I just wanted you to understand that as soon as I press that connect button that everybody does go live. So it is my pleasure and my honor to have you on today of the Making of the Mogul radio show.
Thank you.
And you doing okay today?
I'm doing fabulous. How about yourself?
I'm doing all right. I know you are busy. You're a very busy individual. I am extremely impressed with just your work and your brand. And can I be really, really honest? Like, I have interviewed a lot of people, and I'm nervous with this interview with you today.
Really?
And I'm really shocked at myself because I don't meet any strangers. Like, every time I meet somebody, it's never like the first time I've ever met them. But I'm really nervous because I see your heart not just for the work that you do in the fashion industry. But I had an opportunity to do just a little bit of background research about your foundation. And so you are doing some amazing work. And I just really, really, really want to pick your brain today and just have a better understanding for my followers and listeners and even the people that are fans of your brand on what that journey looks like for you. And so if you're ready, I'm ready to get started.
Are we live right now?
We are already live, yes. So, but that's okay. This is a family show. Don't worry about that. Is there anything that you want to know, you want to know about the format of the interview or anything you need from me before we get started?
Okay. You said we live right now. We already started, all right?
Yeah, we already started.
Nothing I need.
Okay. All right. And then Phil, at any point, because I have the ability to edit this interview, so at any point if you need to take a breath or you need to ask me something or you need to interrupt me.
That would be helpful right now because I had a client walk in right when I was getting started. I needed to call on. If I can wrap up with him and then call you right back. Do you have a window of opportunity? I'll call you back, say, within the next 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's fine. So what I can do is just again, we're on air. So I have a time frame for set on the switchboard for this interview. So what I'll do is just increase the time and then just call back in. When you're ready to do the interview. You said in about 20 minutes?
Yeah. Thank you so much. That helps me out tremendously. All right. I'll call you right back. All right?
Okay. All right.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Excuse me. Thank you so much for tuning in today to the Making of the Mogul radio show. And I am excited today about our interview with Mr. Wilson, and we're going to make some adjustments to the recording. So anyhow, we're going to talk today from a perspective of what it is that we do to push the bar as it relates to achievement for those of us that are involved and entrenched right in the culture. And so one moment, I just need to write some information down. And so this entire radio show is really about what makes good people great. What differentiates a good brand from a great brand, what's the roadmap for that journey? What does that journey look like? Is it unique to each individual, or does it resonate some similarities? And so you all know that I wrote a literary work that I think is probably the most, for years I've been writing articles, some which have been published in academic journals, as well as writing articles for the, which is why I ended up creating the Making of the Mogul magazine, because of all of the articles that I was writing. Some of them were published. The lion's share of them was not. But because of my love for journalism and for writing, it was my desire to want to be able to publish them within my own platform and format if they if they did not necessarily make it to an academic platform or to a format or a magazine that is already published and in the public eye. And so I write these articles pretty much on a monthly basis. It is a way for me to recalibrate my thoughts and some of the research that I have the ability to do. Really writing the articles is really my form of journaling, right? Like some people keep a journal of their day-to-day interactions as a way to recalibrate and to bring some levity to the information that they receive, right? And because we have so much information that is entering into our space, right? I always say that information really is entering into our space at the speed of light, right? Whether you're turning on the television, whether you're on a social media platform, information is just instantaneous, right? Whether you want to see the information or not, if you're on a media platform like Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, you're always receiving information. Same thing when you turn on the television, right? Everybody has an opinion. Nowadays, everybody has a platform, and everybody has some type of discourse that they're offering to society on various topics. And so for me, my way of recalibrating and bringing some levity to that is to streamline the information into what I feel that is relevant to my journey, right, as an individual in the business world who partakes or has a finger on the pulse of entertainment as well. And so out of all that information, I find a topic to talk about, and oftentimes there are specific people that I've been researching on that have the ability to enter into that particular literary work, and the reason is because they fit that particular topic that particular day, right? And so this entire platform is really just the positivity of what makes good people great, right? Like how do we as individuals, right? Because I'm a student. I'm always allowing myself to be mentored by brands and people who have been where I want to go or exist in a space, a mindset, a mentality, a pathway of doing business that I see myself in the future. And so the purpose of the interviews is to always bring in some understanding of the overarching perspective of what makes good people great, right? What differentiates a good brand from a great brand, right? Because there's a lot of different brands out there. What makes a brand good? What makes a brand great? And I never want people to think that necessarily, if you don't have the numbers supporting your platform just yet, that is an indicator that the platform that you have and that you're utilizing is not great or not relevant, right? You always have to keep in mind that timing is everything, and not only timing, but understanding that people will gravitate towards that particular brand once the relevance is increased in the industry, right? And whatever industry that your particular brand partakes in and is a part of, right? And so what's the roadmap for that journey look like? What are the steps? One, what are the intentional steps one after another that allows an individual to be able to progress, right, their brand into who and what they feel they want the public to perceive them as, right? What does that roadmap to that journey look like? Is it one that we need to have several people on that journey with us, right? Because oftentimes people think that a brand takes a lot of individuals, right, to cultivate that brand. One of the, which ties in or segues to my next point, is what resonates as some similarities, right? And one of those things that I have seen that is very much relevant to each brand that I have an admiration and a respect for is that the individual has cultivated their brand and put in most of the work themselves, right? Most of the sweat equity is from an individual perspective. And while every individual and every person, there is typically a support team that arises eventually, right? The majority of the work in its infancy stages really is a lot of work from just one individual, right? One individual putting in the necessary sweat equity, taking the necessary steps, and cultivating the brand independently, right? And so that segues into my fourth point. And is there some uniqueness to everyone's brand as an individual, or does it resonate some similarities, and what does that look like, right? And so when I talk about the difference between the similarities and the uniqueness, it doesn't really matter the industry. It doesn't really matter the topic, right? Like there is steps put in place or a path put in place. You often hear people say, stand on the shoulders of the giants that went before them, right? What does that look like? And so what they're talking about is the process, the steps, how people historically, right, how good people became great and how good brands were cultivated into great brands, right? There are some similarities that resonate amongst each one of those brands as in how they were able to increase their relevancy. In addition to, there is also some uniqueness depending upon the industry and what they offered in those specific industries. And so we're bringing Mr. Wilson on the line to have a conversation with him. And I'm excited about talking with him today. And we have a lot of very important things that we're going to open up some dialogue with. I'm going to open up with just a little bit of information about Outlier. and which is the book that I wrote about Curtis 50 Cent Jackson. It is a lived research case study, and I don't think that I would have found a better person to open up this dialogue with other than Mr. Wilson, based on his brand and his relevancy in his industry and the work that he also offers to society. And so, Mr. Wilson, you there?
Yeah, I am.
Absolutely. Yes, I hear you. And so we have with us fashion extraordinaire Miguel Wilson, and we're going to have a very intensive conversation and interview with him today. And so what I want to open up with, Mr. Wilson, because a lot of people, when they first have a conversation with me, I don't know that they understand my background. And so I'm a trained behavioral scientist. I've spent 20 years researching the matriculation of women and men from day-to-day individuals into their leadership roles in society. And so when I first started this research, I started it from looking at individuals who were leading in leadership in civil rights, people that were leading in educational leadership. Donald Trump was one of the individuals that I did research on way before he was even a president. And I tell people all the time that there was a very obvious path that he was at some point looking to be in some type of politics. I never would have been able to project presidency. But when you compare him to President Reagan, like, it was really just the path was already there. And so what we talk about on this radio show as a behavioral scientist is there is always a path that people such as yourself who are successful and have a passion for the work that they do, that they take. I wrote a book on 50 Cent after conducting a lived research case study on his professional life. The reason I wrote the book about Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, out of all the people that I was doing research on, was because everything about his journey established him as an outlier. And so the people that I bring to the show and I do interviews for are people that I see as outliers. Like, there's something very unique about their journey as they were advancing towards developing a successful brand such as yourself. He was one of the first people to admit publicly that there was some disruption to his process to success. Yet he remained loyal to the industry and to the region that he was raised in. And so one of the things that I really want to open up the interview with as we begin to progress to the track of dialogue that I've set aside for us is, what did it look like for your matriculation in the fashion industry? Like, did you already have ties to the fashion industry?
Well, I got into fashion in 1993.
Okay.
And it wasn't, I hadn't had any training or a friend of mine approached me about us starting a clothing line together. And that's what kind of got me started.
Okay. All right.
I didn't study fashion. I had a passion for it though. So,
okay.
My friend approached me about joining his team. Well, he actually wasn't joining the team, but he wanted to partner with me on creating our own fashion brand. I was interested, and that process, I actually was able to learn about fashion working with him because he had worked in fashion for many years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. What were you doing before you entered into the fashion industry?
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
What were you, I think I read somewhere that you were in the military. I come from a military family,
yeah.
So thank you for your service. What were you
thank
doing
you, yeah,
prior to entering into the fashion industry?
Well, I was, I worked in corporate with, well, I started out with, out of college. I graduated from Clark, Atlanta. I went to Bowie State for 4 years, but I ended up graduating from Clark, and
okay.
After graduating, I went to the Army. I was an officer. I got commissioned at Howard University, so I had to go in the Army and did that. And then I went to work for Pillsbury Food Company. So it was when I was working with Pillsbury. Yeah, I lived in North Carolina in Charlotte, and it was during that time that I became friends with a guy named John Gatling, and he and I started a clothing business called John Michael Clothiers in North Carolina. That was my start.
Oh, wow. Amazing. So were you raised in Atlanta or North Carolina?
Neither.
Oh,
I grew up in in D.C.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that was you know, my background, you know, up until I didn't leave DC till I was about 21 years old.
Okay. And you said you worked for a company, Pillsbury. That's ironic because the foundation that I own, we actually we own and operate a licensed bakery as well. Pillsbury has done amazing for themselves in that particular industry because it is not an easy industry to advance in. How many years do you think it took you to build a sustainable business model in the fashion industry?
Honestly, I feel like I'm still trying to build one.
Do you really? Okay.
Sustainable. Well, you know, the thing is, you know, fashion is constantly changing. You know, I think, you know, a lot of my concerns have changed. When I first got into business, you know, I'm always concerned about, will they like my clothes next year? And
right.
Will they like my designs next year? And, you know, fashion is I would say fashion changes a little bit every single day. And, you know, for me, I've been fortunate to be a trendsetter on certain levels, and the fact that people actually like my clothes has made all the difference. But timing's been very key too, because I think just you know, I had my ups and downs. In 2011, I filed bankruptcy, and literally had to shut my company down and started a whole another company. That's when I actually started Miguel Wilson Collection. At that point, you know, going through the process of that, I was able to really redefine, you know, taking all the learnings I had up to that point, I was able to redefine myself and recreate a brand that I thought could help me be more sustainable. And it has been working out so far.
Absolutely. That that's a good segue into the next thing I was about to ask you. So when we look at a brand that has had the type of impact that your brand has had on the industry and on culture, do you think that there is a set process for, like, recalibrating a brand and its relevance? Like, obviously, or I'm assuming the brand that you were a part of originally potentially was not as large as the brand that you have now. Do you think that there was a set process for recalibrating your brand's relevance?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I reestablished a whole new brand because what I had created before just didn't fit the new vision. Okay. The new vision, you know, previously my company was Executive Clothiers. And Executive Clothiers, we focused on a lot of corporate business, and we focused on, you know, pastors and politicians, you know, business people that wore suits. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, God gave me a new vision when after the bankruptcy and I had to start all over, God gave me a new vision. And a new vision was focusing on the bridal market, focusing on weddings for men. And
okay.
The reason was that I wanted to establish myself as a brand using my name. So previously, when I had executive clothiers, while I did a lot of famous people, you know, I had a lot of celebrity clients I had worked with before, but no one really was familiar with my brand, and no one really knew me personally. My name, Miguel Wilson, didn't mean nothing to nobody. So I wanted to establish my name as a brand, and
okay,
you know, that was a wholly different, totally different direction. You know, I really, and the focus being on building more of a lifestyle brand. The going into the wedding market was just the entry into the business to help me establish my name, because people know, you know, who I am. But, you know, since then, I have been able to get some brand recognition and name recognition and so forth. So, you know, I started the process with doing other things other than just the bridal stuff again, you know. So I have my suits and sport coats and track suits and, you know, more casual gear and so forth. So within, as far as recalibrating it, it really was me starting all over. So it wasn't
mm-hmm.
just me taking the company and shifting direction or focus. It was just, you know, a total revamp.
Absolutely. And so let's talk about, so when you did that revamping, how did you develop the loyalty that you have? Because when, just from the outside looking in, just studying your brand and watching your brand expand throughout the years, I think I was made aware of your brand about 3 to 4 years ago. And so I've somewhat just been watching and admiring your brand from a distance. And the people that support you, there is some brand loyalty there. How did you establish that type of loyalty with your customer base?
You know, from a business standpoint, I approached it from a standpoint of I want to create a business that I want to shop at. I want to create a business that I would love to do business with. And
mm-hmm.
looking at it more from a consumer standpoint, it helped me a lot in terms of developing a company that people would want to do. So hold on a second. My wife is in the car and she has some issues. Hold on.
Okay,
so,
that's all right. Tell her I said hello.
Yeah, she says hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hey.
Yeah, she's fine now. So,
and happy belated anniversary.
Thank you. Celebrate. May 28th was our 1 year anniversary.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm sorry, tell me your question. What was I talking? My wife interrupted me and I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, no, we were talking about how you establish brand loyalty.
Yeah, so creating a brand and a business that I wanted to be a part of means you're establishing something that people want to continuously serve or do business with. So the pillars for me, number one was service. So what does that mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
Service to me means, number one, treating people like I want to be treated. And service starts the moment someone engages with us. So it could be, I don't care if it's through social media or a text or email or walking into one of our showrooms. So I wanted to engage with you in such a way to make you feel as if we do care, because we do, and that we really want your business. So I tell people all the time, we have stores we have a store in Atlanta at Phipps Plaza, and, you know, Phipps Plaza has Versace, has Gucci, Tom Ford, and many other great brands. But we're on the second floor. And I tell my guys all the time, we have to give people a reason to want to walk by all those other places and come do business with us. So understanding that, you know, we have to be willing to go the extra mile to help people feel great. And not just, you know, celebrities. I'm talking about just average guy. We want to make the average guy feel like he's a celebrity. That's what we want to do. We want to make the average guy feel like this business is just as important as 2 Chainz business to us, which it is. So our clientele may be 10% celebrities or whatever. 90% of it is guys who go to work or run businesses and work hard for their money and spend it with us. So you need to show an appreciation for people's hard-earned money being spent with us. And
absolutely.
When it comes in the service piece, you know, I always keep refreshments. I want to offer you something to drink. For me, I tell my guys, you know, I don't even like going into just showing people clothes when I first meet them. I want to have a conversation with you. I want to know, you know, what you're looking for, what's where you are in terms of what the purpose you want to wear the clothes to, and just get an understanding of everything so I can better assist you, you know, prior to just showing you clothes and it's like it's not really meeting your needs.
Absolutely. So you take the time to understand their personality and to develop some type of rapport with the customer.
Exactly. You got to establish rapport. So And make it personable. You know, I always like to engage in getting to know people. I think, you know, just genuinely getting to know you, you know, your background, where you're from, what you do. And, you know, and I find that you're better able to serve somebody when you understand them better as well. So, you know, all that comes into play. But, you know, the service is one piece. I think you got to deliver great product. So,
absolutely.
Through my experience, have fine-tuned the fit of my clothing. And I think that that's one thing that a lot of guys really like. It makes it easy for them to shop with us because most guys can walk in our store and put on a suit and it's going to fit them and look great.
Okay.
So that helps tremendously. And then our creativity when it comes to design and, you know, doing stuff that may be a little unique. So I just think for every business, being able to get brand loyalty and customer loyalty, it differs. You know, the things you need to do can be very different. And even within the same industry, it could be different. You know, the keys to another business may be different than the keys to the success of my business. But for me, service is number one. Then quality products, you know. So our strategic advantage is that I design all the clothes pretty much in the store. And that's a good thing, but it could be a bad thing. And the good thing is that you can't go other places and get my clothes. You got to come to the stores or shop through us to get our product. So establishing a good product everybody likes, that's nice. But then controlling the distribution of their product creates brand loyalty too, because if they can only come to you to get what they like, then you know, then you winning.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the culture a little bit, because you are totally infused in the culture of rap, hip hop, like that speaks volume. When I think about Miguel Wilson, like I think about the culture. I think about rap and hip hop and the music industry. So let's talk about like that integration of culture, fashion, and music. Do you think that just that we're at a good point in the culture where fashion, art, because I paint, do you think that we're at a good point where fashion and art and music has now integrated to a point that it allows an easy entrance for people to enter into those various fields without some of the barriers that they used to have to deal with, such as like NWA. Like there were some, there was like some barriers that NWA had to deal with that the next rap group didn't necessarily have to deal with. So when we talk about fashion, music, art, do you think that the barriers are less than when you originally entered into the industry?
Well, the thing is, I haven't always, you know, right now you're referencing rap and musicians and stuff like that. That wasn't always my focal point in business, and it's still not my focal point. I don't focus on going after rappers or artists of any sort. I just think that fashion okay. touches all industries, period. You know, people mm-hmm. of various, of all industries, you know, there's going to be a culture of, and generally speaking, that culture's part of that definition of the culture is going to be the fashion that helps define mm-hmm. that culture. So whether it be a mm-hmm. corporate culture, whether it be hip hop culture, whether it be, you know, any other, the fashion is a big portion of defining that cultural aspect of that business. We cross many lines when it comes to the industries we touch, and therefore also the type of clothes that we do is different for different depending on the purpose and, you know, what guys are looking for. You know, we've mm-hmm. guys that, you know, I had a guy today come in, a good friend of mine, he's 60th birthday's coming up. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, what he wants is, you know, normally he wears, like, nice business suits, conservative, but he's like, man, today, my 60th birthday, I want something that is, I want to stand out in the room. I want to let everybody know when I walk in, it's my birthday, my 60th birthday. And we designed the two forms and said that. Right. So
uh-huh.
I think even in his closet and as most average guys, they're going to have a variety of functions, variety of things to go that requires them to, you know, most guys don't dress the same way for every single thing. You know what I'm saying? So
right.
some guys can wear a nice suit to this, can wear a sport coat to that, can wear a tuxedo to this, you know, so it's the style can change based on the environment you're going in. But I think
okay.
the change I've seen more than just from doing business with, you know, a variety of industries is just the acceptance of black designers today. I'm seeing a movement of where people are starting to value black designers. And,
absolutely.
And I say that from the standpoint, value is coming from the support. You know, I did a wedding a couple weeks ago with I did Pinky Cole and Derek from, you know, Pinky from Slutty Vegan and Derek
mm-hmm.
from Big Dave's Cheesesteaks. They got married, big wedding, and, you know, it was on People Magazine and all over. And they chose to use all black designers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For our wedding,
amazing.
They did primarily all... Yeah, for our wedding, we did primarily all black design. Not just black designers, but even, you know, most of my events and things, I use only black businesses, vendors. You know, I serve,
mm-hmm.
I have black chefs. I serve black-owned spirits.
Okay.
You know, I do an event in October called the Atlanta Fashion and Polo Classic. And, you know, I even fly in a bunch of black polo players. So I'm just seeing that the acceptance, we're starting to accept each other on a more luxurious level. So we've always
mm-hmm.
been cool with giving each other $5 t-shirt money.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
I'm seeing a difference, a shift in, okay, I want something really nice and I'm going to pay top dollar and I still want to use a black designer. This is the change I'm seeing more so than the change I really love seeing because, you know, too often, you know, a lot of mainstream designers influence from our culture.
Absolutely.
Okay? Whether it be hip-hop, whether it be the athletes, whether it be, you know, but just black people in general, we have been a leader in fashion. And I'm talking about African-Americans, not just
mm-hmm.
black people around the world. I'm saying us here in this country, people follow us. People in China want to wear what we wear. People in Europe want to do the stuff we do. People, they want to listen to our music. They want to, you know, rock our clothes. So it's a shift. So if all these designers that we spend big money with are pretty much taking our ideas and our style to design, why not cut them out and use our own to do what we already do? So,
absolutely.
You know, featuring black designers is something that I'm really happy to see more of going on.
You know, you mentioned about them stealing from our culture. So the foundation owns an art exhibit, and so I post paintings from the exhibitions rarely, like on a regular basis. So one of our most popular two exhibitions that we have right now, one of them is entitled The Black Barbie and Black Ken Exhibition, and the other one supports the book that I wrote about Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, and it's entitled The Outliers Exhibition. One of the art pieces, the name brand Coach, after I put the art piece out, 6 months later, they produced a sweater with the exact image on the sweater. And you go through these range of emotions when you know that your art, when somebody is stealing from you, right? And so first honored, you know, huh?
I hear you. I understand.
Yeah, like first I was honored, then I was livid, and then I went back to a space like I'm not large enough to fight that giant, right? And so here I am with people, like my telephone is ringing, my text message is off the hook, because everybody knows that it's like my art piece is on this sweater. But there's nothing that I can do about it, really. Like, they're a giant. Like, where would I even start from that? And so I think it is so essential to know the relevance. And that's why I really wanted to interview you, because your brand is first class. And it is so important for us to understand that we have people that come from the culture who are producing products and services that offer that 5-star, 7th treatment without us having to go outside of our community, and we can continue to recycle our dollars. And our dollars is worth $1.3 trillion as it relates to the money that we spend in fashion and industry. So that's why I really wanted to bring you on the show today. And so I'm about to wrap up. I know your time is essential to you. Tell us about the foundation, about the Atlanta Black Polo event, and tell us about your foundation.
Okay, sure. So briefly, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and, you know, I was exposed to horses as a kid, and that exposure just took me down a different path in life, giving me a lot of different opportunities, meeting a lot of different people that I otherwise would have never met, and doing things that I, you know, otherwise would have never been able to do, including, you know, becoming a polo player. So in doing such, I wanted to be able to offer kids that are growing up in a similar environment that I grew up in the same opportunity. So we created the Ride to the Olympics Foundation to help expose inner city kids to horses and polo. And I created the Atlanta Fashion and Polo Classic, which is a luxury polo derby style party, in order to further that cause by exposing our whole community to it and provide a fundraiser for the foundation. So the Polo Classic, you know, when I think about luxury, and I think most of us can admit that most people don't think about anything black when it comes to luxury, whether it be clothing, whether it be events, whether it be even food, think about it. Like, they'll call French food or Italian food gourmet, but soul food, which everybody loves, everybody eats, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of creative things are being done around it, but why isn't soul food considered gourmet?
Absolutely.
You know, so we reserve these lugs, the terms, the luxury, the high-end stuff to everything but our own culture. So me creating the Atlanta Fashion Polo Classic was an effort to create a luxury environment, something that we all can be a part of celebrating us. So it's a luxury party, but it's focused on the African-American and Latin American culture. And the culture is the fashion, the food, the spirits. You know, we only serve, like, black-owned and Latin-owned tequilas, vodkas, whiskeys, things of that nature. So that event is a special event because there's nothing else like it for people to participate in. But also it's for a good cause in terms of creating opportunities for us to help fund the kids. You know, in 2019 at the Polo Classic, we created and funded the first black college polo team in history at Morehouse. And so,
yes, I read that. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. And now our objective is to create our objective right now is to create polo teams consisting of kids at Boys and Girls Clubs in Atlanta in the DMV area, particularly Maryland. So we're looking to create these inner city polo teams and be able to have these kids play against each other in different cities. So that's my big vision right now.
Absolutely. That is amazing. And so in saying all that, I see you as a society disruptor. Right. So number one,
okay.
you have this 5-star, 7-star clothier brand. Then you interject the brand with a foundation that promotes a sport
Sorry.
That typically you don't see African Americans participating in. How have you navigated the political terrain of rising your brand to the level that it exists at now, because you've raised the bar in a number of ways. How have you navigated the political terrain in the fashion industry and in the polo industry?
Interesting question. I don't know that I really have had to navigate politically per se. I participate politically. I don't know if you know, but I addressed the governor, the only black governor in the United States is Wes Moore, Maryland. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I addressed him for his inauguration and for his gala and other events. And he has appointed me to the Maryland Economic Development Committee. So, from that perspective, I've been, you know, involved in the community and trying to help other businesses and so forth. But, you know, as far as me having political strategic thoughts or whatever around, I probably need to be better at that. But you know, I haven't really I don't go after political situations per se. I'm not a politician per se. I just want to be
mm-hmm.
able to be in a position to help. So. Not sure if I quite answered your question.
Okay, absolutely. And so I belong to, and it's not really an organization, but to the city of Baltimore has a group of individuals for their economic development department. And they're doing some amazing work within the city of Baltimore. particularly, they have strategically aligned themselves with African-American minorities so that they can have increasing ownership in the Baltimore region. And so as we were looking for locations to do a brick-and-mortar location, actually Baltimore is at the top of my list as it relates to opening up our first brick-and-mortar bakery. And so that they have an amazing economic development plan in Baltimore. So lastly, the last thing I wanted to ask you is I have two more things. This and then the last thing we're going to close with is specifically about your brand. But if somebody asks you like the top three pieces of advice for up and coming entrepreneurs and business owners, I've been taking copious notes over here. I think I already know what three things you're going to say, but what are the three pieces of advice you would offer entrepreneurs and business owners?
One, businesses are businesses that solve problems. So number one, if there's a problem in your industry, that's where you want to focus. That's where the opportunities are. Being able to fix something or address an issue or problem that is happening. And that's what I did pretty much in creating Miguel Wilson Collection. The problem I addressed was that everyone was focused on the bride. Nobody was focused on giving grooms a great wedding experience or good, nice clothing for their weddings. So I attribute that to a big part of my success, too, just the timing of identifying a problem at the time and being able to address that problem. Another thing, I went to business school, and, one thing that I had to learn on my own that they didn't teach me in business school is just the importance of just operating with good character and integrity. I think that's too often overlooked. And not that I was a person of, bad integrity. I didn't just intentionally do things, but I'll give you an example. I had a guy the other day call me and say, he wanted me to do some clothes for them, and the event is coming up in a few weeks. And, it's possible we can get it done, but it's also possible that something could go wrong, and I may not be able to get it done. So having that honest conversation with them saying, hey, I'm fine with trying, however, just understand there's some risk because we won't have time to overcome any significant challenges that may occur. I'm open to giving it a shot. The old me would have just said, yes, here's the cost. Give me the money, man, and I'll start. And I just hope that I will get it done. And I would just, hey, I'm going to try my best, but never really communicating to the customer the potential issue. And I think that is a part of operating with integrity and good character. You want to be able to do things, operate your business in such a way that you don't have to look over your back, look over your shoulder, or worrying about anything that can come up from something you promise. If you tell somebody something, it's very important that you be able to live up to the expectations that you set. And that's another thing. It's up to us to set the expectations for our customers. I think a big problem in business sometimes is that we allow our customers to assume things about the business, about the service, about whatever. And that's where a lot of dissatisfaction comes in because when things happen differently than what they expect, then it's like, oh, you didn't do this, or, oh, you didn't do that. And it may not even have been a part of your process, but at the end of the day, we have the responsibility as the owner, as the people taking other people's money, to make sure that it's very clear on what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, so that the customer doesn't run off with their own thoughts. I'll give you an example. In our business, if you get a custom suit from us, there are no alteration fees. We may need to adjust the suit when we finish. We may need to make a little small adjustments here and there, whatever. But at the end of the day, the customer doesn't have to pay any alteration fees because it was custom made for you, and we're going to make it fit you without any additional costs.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you buy a suit in the store from us and it needs alterations, that's an additional fee. It's very
mm-hmm.
important that that's communicated to people so that they don't think, oh, well, I thought I paid for this already. Oh, you didn't tell me I had the extra costs associated to me being able to wear it. You know I got to wear the suit. So I think
mm-hmm.
people will run off with their own expectations. It's very important that you control the expectations, control the narrative, and that's going to help you get better service from perception. Because most people are all right with whatever you tell them. It's just the fact you got to
mm-hmm.
tell them. They don't know. Then that's when people start getting, especially if you tell them something that.
Absolutely.
Right.
This interview has been amazing. Ms. Wilson, thank you for allowing me to steal some moments of your husband's time. And so the last thing that I want to ask from you, and I want your customers and my followers to know about Miguel Wilson Fashion and Clothing. When people encounter your brand, and we're talking strategically, when they encounter your brand, whether they see your website, whether they attend the polo, the Black Atlanta Black Polo event, if they walk into one of your locations, what do you want them to remember about Miguel Wilson?
Mm. You know, that's something I actually tell my guys all the time. And that
okay.
is, people may forget about the suit,
okay.
but they should never forget about the experience. So for me, it's about when you make people feel good, they will remember you. So I want people to remember me making them feel good. And it's not necessarily about the clothes, but just from a standpoint of being kind and showing love. And that's the word for me that defines my brand, and everybody that works with me understands that. You know, we must exhibit and have people feel the love when they walk through the doors. So that's what I want people to remember.
Absolutely. Mr. Wilson, thank you so much for allowing me to have some of your time today. You are, I know your wife tells you all the time, but let me just talk from a perspective of somebody who studies people on a regular basis and studies the constructs of society and how people such as yourself who are outliers have disrupted industries. Like when I study a brand like Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, and when I encountered your brand, that like when I say level, I'm saying 5-star, 7-star treatment. I'm on my way to your event. I haven't had a chance to attend one of your events yet,
mm-hmm.
but I'm on my way. But when I attend like events that Curtis 50 Cent Jackson has hosted in the Midwest, and when I encountered your brand, it put me in the same mindset. You are phenomenal. You are offering society, not just our culture. Like I want to be intentional about that. You're not just setting the bar within our culture. You're setting the bar within society in the fashion industry. And I just want to encourage you to continue to rise and continue to do what you do best, and prayerfully and strategically our paths will cross in this journey of life. And thank you so much for allowing me to pick your brain today and to agreeing to do this interview today.
Thank you. My pleasure. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank
All
you
right.
so much. And I'll see you at the Atlanta Black Polo event.
Okay. So for your listeners, if you are interested in following me, it's Miguel Wilson Collection on Instagram. And the Atlanta Fashion and Polo Classic has a page as well. And that is at Fashion and Polo Classic on Instagram. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Talk with you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty. That is the amazing Miguel Wilson, fashion extraordinaire and society disruptor, right? We interview amazing people on the Making of the Mogul Making of the Mogul radio show. And we continue to push the needle forward on how we process ourselves within the culture and what it looks like to expand the brand that we offer society from a perspective culturally and just from a integrity and societal perspective as well. My name is Tanola Oliver. I am your behavioral scientist. This is the Making of the Mogul radio show. This has been an amazing addition. If you all are out there, meet me there or beat me there. I will be at the Atlanta Black Polo fashion event. So God bless you. Until we see each other again, live in the overflow, please.